Let's go up north there to Toronto and our old friend Eric Childress. Eric, how are you?
I'm okay, man. How you doing?
Not bad, not bad. Now, we talked to you on Saturday night, and you gave us a rundown of everything that you'd seen so far, and you said by far the best movie that you had seen at the festival was Gravity, directed by Alfonso Cuarón and starring George Clooney and Sandra Bullock. They screened it tonight. I did not go. I'm going to go when they screen it in IMAX.
Yeah.
But I hear nothing but great things. The screening apparently went exceedingly well.
Tonight. Yeah, I got a ton of emails from people back home who are all just completely on the same wavelength that I was after I see it. So
it was
tremendous.
For me, it was one of the most anticipated films of the year, even before anybody had seen it. For me,
right,
personally.
Yeah.
And now that I hear all this great stuff from you and everybody else and all my other colleagues, I'm unbelievably excited to see it. But I'm going to wait till for the IMAX screening. I'm going to see it in IMAX
That'd be a good deal. I might show up for that as well.
Yeah, and have a heart attack probably. So
I'll be there for you.
Thank you.
Because
I was white knuckled during the fourth Mission Impossible. I was like, seriously, like grabbing onto the seat like I was going to fall. And,
yeah, you might want to buy one of those lifelines for your neck.
Right, attach it so I don't, yeah. No, but I mean, that was incredible. In IMAX, that was, watching that Mission Impossible, that scene where, Cruise is running up and down that building, forget it.
That was tremendous.
It was awesome. all right, well, okay, so we all know that you're seeing a ton of movies during that time period.
Yep.
Remind everybody when you got there. You got there a week ago, right? Or no, Wednesday.
Got there Wednesday.
Right.
Yes.
And it's Tuesday
Wednesday
morning
and
now.
I saw one movie that it was a studio-sponsored screening, so it wasn't technically part of it's in the festival, but it wasn't part of the festival.
Yeah.
So I saw one movie on Wednesday, and then since Wednesday, I've seen another 29.
I have
seen 30 movies since arriving in town.
That's basically you've seen 29 movies since Thursday.
Yeah.
It is now Tuesday morning.
Yeah, I saw 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I saw 7 movies today.
You're nuts. You are nuts. But
yep. Thank you.
But we got, we get to get the reports from you, and a lot of these movies are either already have distributors or going to pick up distributors, and we are getting a preview of a lot of the things that we're going to see coming.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. I'm looking at Dan. Hey, Dan, what is that picture, that 8x10 behind you? What is that? Is that an old collage from GN?
It is an old collage of GN. Ben Cortez, our morning engineer, found it.
he said,
is this the new one or the old one?
I'm sorry. I just got distracted. I looked up and I'm like, what is that? What era are we talking? Because I can see Spike, Kathy, and Judy Williams. Is that Roy on the left in the middle?
That's Milty.
Oh, that's well, where's Roy?
Well, it's post-Roy.
Oh, it's post-Roy, so it's after 98.
Right.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, where's Cochran?
Cochran's underneath Spike.
Okay, okay, there he is. Okay. And then there's Milt in the middle. There's Orion and Max. Who's in the butt? Steve and Johnny. Who's the bottom left?
That would be Mr. Dave Kaplan with hair and Tommy Waddle.
Oh, okay. I couldn't recognize it because Cap had hair. Wow, that's cool. All right, so
and
we're
his
talking,
shirt isn't a neon color.
So it's Cochran. So it's post 2000 because Cochran didn't come here until after 2000. So that's from circa 2000. All right, I'm sorry, but I saw it behind you, and I'm like, wait a minute, what's going on? Did they take a new headshot without me? Because I'm full time now. All right. Anyway, it was weird. Sorry, Eric. I just got a little distracted.
Oh, that's okay. I'd love to see you try and sit through 30 movies out here.
That's not going to happen.
What is that?
Okay, so let's get a great preview from Eric, and you guys jot these titles down. They will probably many of the movies that Eric is going to talk about are going to be released here in Chicago at some point before the end of the year. And if you're interested in any of them, you can call us with your questions at 312-981-7200. All right, Eric, let's dive right in. You go in whatever order you want to go in movies that you've seen.
Well, it's the late night, so why don't we talk some horror?
Okay.
Let's talk some horror. I got a lot of horror movies here,
we're
going to be interested in.
Okay, and by the way, 2013 has been a banner year for the horror genre. As a fan of the genre, a banner, banner year for the horror films. Okay,
yeah. I can't say when a couple of these might come out. They might not be till next year, but that only means that next year is going to get off to a pretty good start.
That's such great news. It's my favorite genre.
Mm-hmm.
All right, give me a title. Let's go.
Well, the first one we'll talk about, Ty West has a new film.
Love him.
Love him. Sacrament.
The Sacrament?
Yeah. I've never been a big fan of Ty West stuff. House of the Devil, The Innkeepers, which I know you're a big fan of.
Yeah.
Always had a problem specifically with his endings, and I think he's a little too attached to the slow burn buildup. But this
I will say this. I will say this. The Innkeepers. I hated what they did. As you know, I hated what they did to Sarah Paxton's character. So
yes.
I wasn't crazy about the ending.
I totally agree.
Wasn't crazy about the ending. But House of the Devil, I loved all the way through, start to finish.
Okay.
So all right,
well,
here we go.
This to me is his strongest work to date. And basically, what it is, it's more or less sort of a modern retelling or realization of Jonestown is what it comes down to.
Okay.
It stars some of your favorites from Your Next, Joe Swanberg, A.J. Bowen, Amy Simetz. And it concerns, you know the TV show Vice on HBO?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Well, Swanberg and A.J. Bowen and another guy play reporters for Vice who get a letter from one of their sisters that she's been living off of this sort of hippie compound, this religious compound called Eden Parish, off the beaten path. And they get invited to come over and, you know, sort of document and tell their story. So it's told a little bit in the way of sort of a found footage kind of a deal as they document this thing. And they get down there, and everything's peace and love and happiness, and everyone wants to be there and everything. And then they meet the guy in charge called himself Father. Played by an actor named Gene Jones. Everything's on the up and up, but of course this is a horror film, so things really quite aren't. And so it's basically the discovery of, you know, the stuff that's going on down there, and what leads to basically this sort of gigantic panic in the second half of the movie as the compound feels they're being threatened by the reporters feel they're also being threatened. This is not a film that deals with the sort of the supernatural stuff that Ty West has been used to. It plays it very straight, and it builds up to just sort of a remarkable second half. Really eerie and tension-filled, and I'm completely down with it, hook, line, and sinker. I think this is his strongest work as a director.
Wow, great. That's great news. The Sacrament. And are all these guys just going to make movies together now? Is that the deal? They're all just going
to... I think so.
And I don't have a problem. By the way, I don't have a problem with it if the results are like Your Next and the VHS 2 movie.
Yeah. No, I mean, A.J. Bowen is a guy that, I mean, he's actually really funny, too, as well as being part of these horror movies.
Yeah.
He was one of the pizza guy in House of the Devil, if I'm not mistaken.
Right, yes, he was. Yes.
Yeah. So The Sacrament, that's a good start.
Cool. All right.
For a horror day.
All right there, Eric. Hang on a second. Hang on. We got to take a break. Hold on. Eric Childress is with us. We are getting an exclusive live report from Toronto. He's at the Toronto International Film Festival, where he's seen 30 films since Thursday, basically. Yeah, he's nuts. But we're getting exclusive previews. So the first one he's talking about is a horror thriller called The Sacrament. So look for that one. He says it's pretty terrific. More exclusive Toronto Film Festival reports coming up. Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Studios on the 7th floor of Trib Tower. And we're overlooking Michigan Avenue here until 5 a.m. when Steve Cochran comes in. We'll spend some time with him after 5 as we do each weekday morning. And you can call us at 312-981-7200. Send your text to 24720. Follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and Facebook.com/Nick D Show. Eric Childress from eFilmCritic.com joins me on Saturday nights for the movie reviews. Is live in Toronto covering the Toronto International Film Festival for us. Hello, Eric.
Hello.
By the way, I wanted to mention, you mentioned HBO with Vice,
mm-hmm.
with the show Vice. I want to mention two things about HBO. One, I know you've been really busy and you've been seeing like 8,000 movies a day. Take some time to go online and look up the trailer for the new HBO series called True Detective.
Oh, they have a new one out for it? I've seen the teaser. That was a couple months ago.
Okay, but have you seen the whole one with McConaughey and Woody Harrelson?
No.
Oh.
I just know that there are two of them are in it. That's all I need.
Oh, man. I can't even explain to you what a tear this guy is on. It's just mm-hmm. McConaughey. It looks so good. It starts in January. It's called True Detective. And at that point, when this thing debuts, maybe McConaughey will be about a month away from getting an Academy Award, perhaps. So,
possibly.
Because actually, in case you didn't listen on Saturday, Eric, tell everybody just a very, you know, quickly about Dallas Buyers Club, and it comes out in November here.
Yeah, well, it was a true story of a guy named Ron Woodruff, who right when the AIDS crisis was sort of hitting the heterosexuals, was diagnosed and became HIV positive, was given 30 days to live, and when he discovered that sort of the FDA was not approving the right drugs at the time, he went out with some underground doctors and found the right drugs that could keep patients with HIV alive, and was basically sort of selling them on the black market.
Yeah.
And McConaughey, he lost like 38 pounds for the role, and it shows.
Yeah,
every pound shed shows on the big screen, and he's tremendous in it.
Yeah, so that's Dallas Buyers Club, one of many great movies. Well, I haven't seen it yet, but you know, McConaughey's been on a roll over the past couple of years. And I want to say this about HBO and Matthew McConaughey. Oddly enough. I wanted to watch Letterman tonight because we're going to be talking about the 20th anniversary, and Rahm was on Letterman tonight.
Okay.
And so we're going to talk about his appearance. And it was delayed by an hour tonight because of tennis. So to kill that hour, I look on HBO and I'm like, oh, hey, Killer Joe is on. So I flip on to watch the last hour of Killer Joe, and I want to warn everybody who wants to watch Killer Joe on HBO, as far as I can tell, the version that I saw last night was cut.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So it was rated.
Wasn't the NC-17.
It was rated TVMA. And I want people to know that is not Friedkin's cut. There, the last 15 minutes of the movie, which involves Gina Gershon and a chicken leg, and Matthew McConaughey, was heavily edited. Like a lot of, because there were close-up shots of, you know, Gina Gershon, and you know what I'm talking about. And all of those shots have been heavily edited. Most of it is just a shot, an angle up on McConaughey during that whole scene. And I sat there watching it, and I'm like, you know what? People who think that this is the movie, you know, it's not. So rent Killer Joe. Get the NC-17 version because you're not getting the full kick to the stomach and face and funny bone.
Which, speaking of Tracy Letts, tune in Saturday night to your show, and I will give you the full report on August Osage County.
Well, we are preempted on Saturday, so we'll have to do that. Probably the night. There's a Northwestern football game, so I got the night off. So we'll do it though on maybe Sunday night into Monday morning. You know, I got a full-time show now, Eric. So, you know.
I know you do.
Yeah. So, all right, let's go on to the next one really quickly. We've got a couple of minutes, so do something fast.
Okay. Well, let's see. How about All Cheerleaders Die?
Okay.
And this one is co-directed by Lucky McKee.
Oh, cool. All right.
Okay. And it's based on a short that I guess he was involved with several years ago, and involves a girl who joins the cheerleading squad to basically sort of get revenge. One of her friends died while doing a cheerleading stunt, and this is her way of getting revenge on the cheerleaders. Meanwhile, an old friend of hers that she has kind of cast aside from her childhood is involved in witchcraft. So she's trying to figure out a way to get back into her life. So everyone's sort of trying to, you know, find their way into the next level of, you know, high school cliquedom. Basically, and needless to say that the revenge plots get sort of interwoven, and it leads to more revenge plots against the jocks in the high school, and it leads to a pretty crazy time at the movies that unfortunately does not give itself the time to pay off the craziness that ensues. Mm. It spends a lot of time setting things up. There's a lot of promise. This thing, there's definitely some quality kills, and it starts moving fast, but then it seems to be over really quickly before it could really sort of get going, and it seems like there's another 15 minutes to sort of breathe a little bit. Like I said, Lucky McKee is only the co-director and the co-writer on this thing. He's partnered up with a guy named Chris Sivertson, who's done some horror films. He did a Jack Ketchum novel called The Lost. But he's probably most known for the Lindsay Lohan film, I Know Who Killed Me.
Oh.
Yeah. So this movie, the faults of this movie, I'm going to say are mostly his.
Yeah, I would say
more
that,
than Lucky yeah. Mickey, because there's clearly the elements of the sort of the feminist horror stuff that he likes to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's definitely some craziness going on in the movie, but it just seems like it doesn't want to take its time towards in the third act, and it kind of falls apart, unfortunately.
Okay, unfortunately, Lucky McKee, who has made a couple of great films, including May and The Woman, if you've not seen those are classics, and All Cheerleaders Die, kind of a disappointment. All right, Eric, hang on, okay?
Okay.
And we will get more from Eric about a lot of the big films that are playing at the Toronto International Film Festival coming up after the news, which is next. Nick DiGiulio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Studios on the 7th floor of Trib Tower, here till 5 a.m. When Steve Cochran comes in for your morning show, and I'll hang out with Steve after 5 as we do every weekday morning. And we are going to be saluting and celebrating 20 years of David Letterman on CBS. I've been a David Letterman fan since the summer of 19... Well, I was a David Letterman fan when he would show up on talk shows and do some stand-up. But since the summer of 1980, when he had a show on NBC, a morning show. A lot of people don't remember this. It was the summer of 1980. He did a morning show that was on from 9 to 10 on every weekday morning on Channel 5. And he wasn't cut out for mornings, obviously. They tried something new. So then they gave him the late night show following Johnny Carson on NBC for many years until he moved to CBS in 1993. So I'm just the biggest Letterman fan in the world. And I still think he's the best talk show host working today. And so I'm just I'm very happy that that he's been on for 20 years, and we're going to talk about those 20 years and play some highlights too, as well as Rahm Emanuel's appearance on last night's show. We will also play that. But right now, though, Eric Childress is with us. You can hear him every Saturday night with Colin Suter and myself reviewing all the new movies every Saturday night, unless we're preempted, which we are this week by a Northwestern football game. And we might be on a little bit later here and there, but you can hear him every Saturday Night Review and Movies. Well, he is in Toronto at the Toronto International Film Festival giving us a full report. All right, Eric, give us a let's go to another one.
Okay, let's stick with the horror.
Okay,
here. We have a new film from Eli Roth.
Okay,
another one of my least favorite horror directors, but you like him on occasion.
I love Cabin Fever and I love Hostel.
Yeah,
I hated Hostel 2 with every fiber of my being.
But we both kind of liked Aftershock, which she co-wrote and starred in.
I thought Aftershock was really pretty great. And
yeah.
So that's where I am with him. I like him more than you do because I really love Cabin Fever, especially. I think Cabin Fever is his best movie, and I liked the first Hostel because I like to see. American douchebags get their comeuppance. So that's...
Okay, well, then you might like this movie.
Okay.
Because this is Eli Roth back in the director's chair, and the film is called The Green Inferno.
Okay.
And it concerns a group of college students, for the not too fine a point, sort of slacktivists, who sort of, find, the latest cause out there and try to, put their own stamp on it to save the world. Well, it's all these college kids. They follow their leader, and it takes them to the jungles of Peru, where they're going to stop the people bulldozing the forest out there, so some of the local tribes don't get displaced and whatnot. Well, they go out there, and looks like they do their job pretty well, and then they're on their way out, and the plane crashes, and they wind up in the hands of one of the tribes that they were trying to help save. And let's just say that this particular tribe, all bathing in red war paint and whatnot, well, they're hungry.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So this is a film that calls back to films like Cannibal Holocaust.
Sure.
And Camp, okay.
Oh, yeah.
That's what we're dealing with here. There's not really too much of a secret what's going on. And this film is as graphic as they come. There's no mincing around here when it comes to cannibalism. So, one by one, they're caged, and it's all about them if they're going to escape, get out of there, or if they're all going to become lunch. I can take all kinds of gore. I have no problem people getting sliced and diced, and I don't usually recoil. But when human flesh, you know, that are eaten not by zombies but by actual people, and they start carving up bits and pieces of stuff, yeah, I had to turn away a couple times.
All right.
Yeah, and I didn't know, you know, whether that meant I was enjoying the film or not, but it turns out it's not too bad.
Okay.
It's actually, this film actually sort of represents Eli Roth sort of, you know, growing a little bit as a horror director. It's like, it's not filled with a lot of real cheap gags, although there are a couple.
Yeah.
The movie, you know, keeps its tone, you know, which is something that I think he's had trouble in the past. It's one of my biggest problems with him in the past is his really sort of sloppy mix of when to use comedy in horror movies.
Right.
But this one is, I mean, it's got funny stuff in it, but it's, you know, not, you know, doesn't really take you out of the picture. So the Green Inferno,
okay,
you know, if you can stomach it, might be up your alley.
Please, you're speaking.
You. Of course.
The Green
I'm
Inferno.
Not worried about you, Nick.
The Green Inferno. Has it got a distributor?
It does not.
Oh,
it does not.
Okay.
But I suspect it will.
I'm just.
And Eli Roth has actually produced The Sacrament as well.
Oh, he did.
So, wow, all these guys. Yeah,
he's all over the place, man. So, you know, yeah, it's only a matter of time before Tarantino throws his name on it.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Exactly.
All right. The Green Inferno, obviously a salute to stuff like Cannibal Holocaust and and other of that ilk. And there are many in the cannibal genre from the 70s, and I'm sure that's exactly what Eli Roth was trying to do here. So
clearly.
All right. Clearly. The Green Inferno, that's on my list for sure.
Yeah.
All right,
well,
man.
I'm going to keep going. I'm keep going with the horror.
Okay.
We got a lot to cover with the horn, and we teased it on Saturday, a movie called Horns.
Yeah.
From
man
Alexander Asia.
Yeah, Alexander Aha, or however you say his name.
I think it's Asia.
Is it Asia? Okay, Alexander
Asia.
Yeah. Okay.
Like just like the band.
Yeah. Or like the Steely Dan album.
That's right.
Yes. Okay.
That's right. So, Horns, which we talked about a little bit Saturday night, involves Daniel Radcliffe, who is in love with the girl from his childhood, played by Juno Temple.
Speaking of Killer Joe, yeah.
Exactly. She's naked in this one, too.
Good.
But they're on the verge of getting married, and next thing you know, she is dead, and he is accused of her murder, and he sort of becomes an outcast in his own town. He completely pleads his innocence, but not stopping everyone from pretty much turning against him and turning him into a pariah. And then he wakes up one morning and he finds that he's got horns growing out of his forehead. And these horns, what people can't see them, and they don't necessarily react, you know, like, oh, you got some horns coming out of your forehead. They immediately start sort of confessing their innermost either desires or like the really worst things that they're capable of. They just start admitting them to them, you know, whether he asked them or not. So he eventually discovers that this might be a good way to sort of grill the town and figure out who might have been responsible for his girlfriend's death. And so what you have here, this sort of this balance between this murder mystery that's happening and this sort of these wacky ideas with the horns, which is something that actually sounds like out of a Stephen King novel.
Yeah.
And when it's dealing with that stuff, when it's dealing with it, and it's almost sort of like becoming or like headed towards sort of an idea like a Needful Things kind of a thing with Daniel Radcliffe or his character sort of becoming the you know the Lucifer of the town, you know, but you know a kinder, gentler Lucifer.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of fun. It's interesting. But when it sort of sits back and, you know, sort of really gets into the murder mystery, it really kind of fails itself. Because, one, the murder mystery is about as easy to figure out as any weekly show on television.
Okay.
It's so easy to figure out. And that stuff doesn't really work. And also stuff with him, you know, sort of taking revenge on certain people doesn't really play into what the character is supposed to be about, this sort of this real innocent guy. But the one thing that's really quite impressive about the movie is Daniel Radcliffe, who gives everything to this role. This guy is an actor,
yeah,
my friend.
Yeah.
This guy gives it all. It's a really sort of impressive performance in a film that could be so completely ridiculous. I'm not recommending the film, but Radcliffe is very much worth watching. It's a better performance than the film deserves, really. Mm-hmm. It's not a terrible film. It's a little over 2 hours long, so it's very overlong. But Redstone is very good, just not the movie so much.
Okay. For those people who are horror fans, this director that we're talking about, who's one of my favorites, is a guy named Alexander Aja, who busted onto the scene about 9 years ago with a film called High Tension, which I still love. I don't care how dumb the twist is.
Yeah.
I still think that movie it just kicks all manner of ass. And the Hills Have Eyes remake he did, I actually like that. Mirrors is a very silly movie, but I think it's well made. He did Piranha 3D, which I loved. And he wrote and produced, and his hand was all over the remake of Maniac that came out earlier this year.
Most certainly
with Elijah Wood. But so there you go. That's Horns. Does that have a distributor?
Yeah. It does not.
It does not. And I'm sure that if it gets,
I suspect it will.
Yeah, I mean, if it gets a distributor, which it probably will, Daniel Radcliffe is in it, so it'll get a distributor.
Yeah.
And if it does, my guess is that you said it was a little over 2 hours. My guess is we're going to see a shorter version of that. That's usually
it'd be nice.
A lot
it'd
of that's
nice.
A lot
it
of
kind of has a real double ending.
Yeah, that I mean that happens a lot though. I mean, like where did you see John dies in the end?
At Sundance.
At Sundance. Well, the version that we finally got to see on demand and here in the theaters, the Don Coscarelli film, was shorter. And I think when you see that version, you'll probably like it even more.
Yeah, after so much criticism that it does happen. You know, sometimes we do may sort of make a difference and say, trim this, and people do listen sometimes.
Yeah. Okay.
So,
all right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back and talk more. Eric is giving us the rundown, especially on the genre of horror. If you're a horror film fan, we've got a lot to choose from in the coming months, and they're all being premiered at the Toronto International Film Festival, which continues for a bunch more days. Eric is going to be there for a few more days. He's seen 30 films since. Since Thursday, basically, and he's going to see a lot more, and we will get more reports from him. Eric Georges live in Toronto with an exclusive report from the Toronto International Film Festival. If there's something playing in Toronto that you're interested about, you have a question, it's 312-981-7200. And again, mark these titles down because we're getting a preview of them before they come out here in Chicago. Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Studios on the 7th floor of Trib Tower. Here till 5 a.m. when Steve Cochran comes in, we'll hang with him a little bit afterwards. We are getting a live report from Toronto. Eric Childress is at the Toronto International Film Festival. We're getting a preview of a bunch of big movies that will be coming out here that he is seeing in Toronto. A couple of texts here, Eric.
Mm-hmm.
Larry says that I just read somewhere that they're already working on a sequel to The Green Inferno.
I was at the screening where Eli Roth was there. I didn't stick around for the Q&A afterwards.
Yeah,
but he didn't mention that at the beginning. So I mean, it's possible. I didn't hear that.
And the reason why from 708 Erica, the reason why Horns sounds like something out of a Stephen King novel is because his son actually wrote the book.
That's right.
Yeah.
He
goes by the name Joe Hill. So if you're looking for, I mean, his name is Joseph King, but he goes by the name Joe Hill. And he's pretty popular. He's done a lot of graphic novels. He's written a lot. And
what I hear, the movie is very faithful to the book, problems and all.
Okay.
That's what I've heard.
All right. And then from 773 area code, did Eric get to see 12 Years a Slave or Gravity, which you saw both? Gravity, you said, is the best film of the festival so far.
Yes.
And 12 Years a Slave, you also liked very much.
Yes, very good. Very good.
All right. So you got to see both of those. And was Finding Vivian Maier one of the 29 movies that you've seen?
Not yet.
Is that one?
That might be something I see when I get home.
Okay. And
I
don't know what's that. Who's what's that?
It's a documentary.
Oh,
that's all I really know about it.
Okay. All right. So there you go. All right, Eric, let's move on. You can do a couple more here. I think we got time for maybe one or two more.
Okay. Well, you like Scarlett Johansson, don't you? Stupid question.
That's the dumbest question anybody has ever asked me, I think. Yeah.
Is this
that Under the Flesh thing?
Under the Skin.
Under the Skin. Okay. The trailer's pretty
cool.
Under
the Skin.
The trailer is pretty cool.
You like the trailer?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, this Scarlett Johansson plays an alien.
All right.
Okay. She apparently has come down to Earth to basically, from what we can tell from the movie, to basically lure men to their deaths. Using her sexuality.
You know what? I'd be dead in 2 seconds.
Yes.
I would not last.
We all would.
I would not last.
We all would.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, she basically picks up guys on the side of the road and say, hey, you need a ride? And then, do you want to come back to my place? And then lures her to her weirdo place, and next thing you know, she's luring them, taking off pieces of her clothing, and they just kind of walk right into this black goop.
Cool.
That's just sitting in the middle there, and then they disintegrate and whatever.
Okay.
Yeah, I wish I could tell you more about what actually goes on in this movie, but it's one of these movies that wants to play the no dialogue game for as long as it possibly can. Mm-hmm. Which works on occasion, you know, just because people aren't saying anything doesn't mean the director doesn't have anything to say, except when they don't know how to say it without dialogue. And that's the case here. The director is Jonathan Glazer, whose other two films were Sexy Beast and Birth with Nicole Kidman. Mm-hmm. Okay. This one is pretty unbearable at times. However, sir, mm-hmm. I am going to tell you to go see it. You know why?
Why?
Because Scarlett Johansson is naked a lot in it.
Wow. This is a first.
Yes.
She's never been naked in a movie before.
Not fully.
Wow. All right.
Yeah.
Well, I really don't give a damn what the rest of the movie is about, quite frankly.
Right. I've already pre-ordered the DVD.
See, that's a note. That's all they need to do is advertise this movie is say that Scarlett Johansson is naked in it, and there's going to be 50 million guys, right? You know, wrapped around the.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. So it doesn't necessarily work, but Scarlett Johansson's naked in it.
That's right.
That's a 4-star review, as far as I'm concerned.
Exactly.
Okay, one more, Eric, before we let you go.
Okay, one more. Well, how about Devil's Knot?
Devil's.
You know about Devil's Knot?
I don't think so. I know about Devil's. I know about Devil's Pass from my man Rennie Harlan, but
of course you did. You watched that yet? By the way,
I have not. No.
Okay. Well, Devil's Knot.
It's Adam Egoyan. Holy!
It is Adam Egoyan.
Okay.
And not only is it Adam Egoyan, it's not a horror film. It's his dramatization of the West Memphis 3 case.
Oh man! All right.
Okay. Jeez,
there's just been so many films that have come about this story. Isn't that unbelievable?
Well, that's the problem.
Okay. All right.
We've had a documentary trilogy, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
Then we had West of Memphis, which was, you know, a pretty solid Cliff Notes version of the documentary trilogy. And here you got the dramatization. You have Reese Witherspoon playing one of the mothers of the children. Colin Firth plays sort of the outside investigator who is sort of skeptical of the investigation. And then you have, you know, all, you know, the, all, it's all about the trial and whatnot and the investigation leading up to it. And this is a film that is so maddeningly unfocused. I don't know why you want to dramatize this movie and end the story with them going to jail.
Oh.
That's what you have here.
Oh, boy.
Okay. It would be one thing to sort of take the story and tell it completely from the point of the view of the parents, you know, in the grieving process, or to really sort of delve into the sort of the miscarriage of justice that dealt with the cops and the rush to judgment and all that kind of stuff. But it tries to have it both ways. And to tell that story in, you know, basically, you know, 105 minutes, end with them going to jail, and then have to literally put the longest epilogue scrawl on the screen to fill you in on everything that happened since they went to jail is so ridiculous. Mm. It infuriated me when I walked out of the theater.
Oh, man, that's too bad. That's too bad. That's Devil's Knot, and, you know, obviously there's been 3 documentaries made about it already. And Adam Egoyan, who I think he's still a really fascinating filmmaker, and I love his stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I even love Adoration and Chloe, his last 2 movies. I think they're both pretty great. I do. I'm not.
This one is just, I don't know why you take that approach to it. It's just like there are other stories you could have told.
Yeah.
That probably, and I mean, even at one point in the movie, Colin Firth goes up to the guy playing Joe Berlinger. They're like, hey, you getting some good stuff for your documentary?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And then he gives them the scene where he basically says, oh, the father gave me this knife that had the blood on it.
Yeah.
It's that stuff is in the movie.
Oh, man. All right.
Yeah.
Well, now, does this have a distributor?
I believe the Weinsteins have this one. I saw their logo was attached to it.
Okay.
So I don't know if they have international rights to it, but yeah.
Right.
You'll see this eventually, but you shouldn't because it's not good.
Okay. Devil's not good. So there you go. Yeah. All right, really quickly, what are you going to see in the next couple of days? Real quick, just rattle off some titles.
David Gordon Green's Joe, I've seen. Jason Reitman's Labor Day. An Elmore Leonard film called Life of Crime. Jason Bateman's Bad Words.
Okay.
That's the next couple of days.
Okay, cool. All right, Eric, and we'll get more updates from you, you know, whenever you feel like calling, we'll take you, and we'll definitely talk to you Sunday night into Monday morning next week to get your rundown, okay?
Sounds great.
All right, buddy, have fun.